Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on the West Coast. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I wanted to let everyone know I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your guides and angels, please call me at 509-750-9793 here in the United States, or you can email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Briefly, my next Galactic Wisdom Conference will be held next year at the same location it was this year in Olympia, Washington, at 9101 Stillicum Road. In Olympia from April 12th to the 16th, 2019. There's a substantial discount of only $55 for the entire conference if you register early. And for more information, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Also this summer, I'll be taking a group of people to Mount Shasta and Telos in the Hollow Earth. It's an incredible trip. I'll be doing it twice from July 2nd to the 8th, 2018, and from September 6th to the 11th, 2018. Been sponsoring trips to Mount Shasta and Telos in the Hollow Earth since 2016. And in 2016, actually, there were a group of five or six Koreans who physically went into Telos and Shambhala and the Hollow Earth, and they had an amazing experience. The only thing is that you need to follow certain spiritual protocols to gain entry, which I send people upon registration. The cost is only $200 per person and includes free camping right on the mountain, on Mount Shasta, right next to several entrances to Telos in the Hollow Earth. If you're interested in coming, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here at 509-750-9793. And with that, I'd like to bring on my next wonderful guest, Kari Corbett-Owen. She's a wonderful clinical psychologist from Vancouver, Washington. And I also want to thank Michiko Hayashi, the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, for referring me to Kari. She's a wonderful person who I know everyone will really enjoy listening to. Kari, are you there?
I am. Hi, Ted, and hello, listeners.
I'm so glad you could come on today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you on. I know we're going to have a good time today. I'll just briefly go over your background. You're a South African-trained clinical psychologist, a speaker and author on longevity. Your website is www.kari.com. That's CariCorbettOwen.com. You're the author of numerous acclaimed books, including Mind Over Fatter Program. That's funny. and also too, you write that passion may be helping people free themselves to live the best life they can, a life with vitality, energy, happiness, and health without pills, powders, or potions. And you've attended many seminars internationally on various TVs and radio shows. And what I like about you is that you want to help people live vibrant and full lives, and you want to help them live better, longer. I don't know whether you were listening to my first hour. You can listen to it over the weekend. It'll be on my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. But I just interviewed Sharon Rose. She's a wonderful a film and artist, a filmmaker and production and artist, and she's doing a film now on Qigong, the power of Qi, and one of her topics she's focusing in on is longevity. So I know both of you will have a lot of things in common. So I'll send you a follow-up email later and introduce both of you so you can be in touch. But
that'll be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like about you is that you've done many studies and found out that people's healthy longevity depends upon their beingness. Now, you capitalize BE rather than on doing. Mm. In other words, our positive and fine thoughts, vibration affect our good health longevity more than going to see doctors. You're also a good friend of Professor Jerry Pollack's at the University of Washington. He's a wonderful man. And you're doing some fantastic things. So I want to welcome you to the program. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much, Ted.
My pleasure. Now, you've also had an interest in water since you were first introduced to Dr. Emoto's work in What the Bleep movie. And you also have an interest in the lives of centenarians because you've lived with them most of your life, interviewed them, watched interviews with them, read books about them, read hundreds of articles about them, and your conclusion is that healthy longevity, instead of having deteriorating health, has to do with their human doings rather than their human beings. Could you explain that a little bit, please?
Well, it's actually the other way around.
Okay.
So what I've discovered is that, you know, centenarians are people that live to over 100, and I'm interested in studying the ones that have all their cognitions intact and who have had great health throughout their lives.
Sure.
But when I really look at them, Ted, what absolutely fascinates me is that, you know, they have different ideas about exercise. They have completely different diets. I know we hear that everybody eats the Mediterranean diet, but it is not true when it comes to centenarians.
Sure.
So their human doings are vastly different. You know, some of them live in cities, some of them are rural, some of them have big families, some have small. So there's very little of their doings that are similar. Mm-hmm. But when I really look at how they live their lives and how they negotiate their way through life, their human beingness, in other words, their state of consciousness, I truly believe is what sets them apart when it comes to health.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I saw your email that you'd written earlier to Michiko, and in it you did a rice experiment with
yes.
And that was just amazing. Could you go over a little bit about that, what you found out, please?
Absolutely. So, you know, ever since I saw What the Bleep, I've been entranced with this idea of water and the fact that, you know, 99% of our atoms in our body are made of water.
Right.
And so, like many other people who have done the rice experiment, I started my own rice experiment, but with a small difference. Because one of the things that I've studied, you know, is neuroplasticity and looking at what happens in the brain. And if you say the word grr, you know, that sort of frustrated feeling, you're actually tapping into the reptilian center of your brain. But if you say make the sound ooh, like you would if you saw a newborn baby or a puppy, you tap into a totally different part of the brain, the mammalian brain. And so I was curious about how those two words would show up in water. Mm-hmm. So I wrote grr on one little note ticket, and I wrote on the other, and I stuck them on the bottle, and every day I would pick up the one bottle with ooh, and I would say, ooh, you're beautiful, and I would pick up the one that said grr, and I'd say, grr, I hate you, you're awful, or you know, something along those lines.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And what fascinated me was that by day 13, now initially I didn't actually have sealed lids on them, I had plastic sealing them with an elastic band.
Pardon me, Kari, but You're a little muffled. You said by day what? I mean, I couldn't pick.
By day 13.
13, okay.
Yes, so 13 days after I started.
Okay.
What I noticed was that the grr bottle was starting to smell really bad.
Wow.
And interestingly enough, the ooh bottle didn't smell at all.
Wow.
But I put lids on both of them at that stage. Mm-hmm. And I continued with my little regimen every day.
Mm-hmm.
And by day 53... the grr bottle was completely black.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
The grr bottle was cloudy, but still, you know, not black. It was just like, almost like a beigeish color, but not cloudy.
I can confirm that because I'm looking at your email now, and I can see the pictures, and she's right.
Yes.
The grr bottle is all black and yucky looking at the ooh
I know,
bottle.
It had a whole lot of scum on it, you know, and sort of like a whole lot of a film on the bottle that the ooh bottle didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just fascinating to me. So I then did nothing with those bottles for a while. They just stayed on my windowsill, where I, by the way, still have them 900 and something days later. So I've been carrying on this experiment for over three years now.
My goodness.
But around about 100 and something days, and I can't remember exactly when it was, I took the label of the grr off the grr bottle, and I just swapped the ooh label onto that bottle, and I did nothing further. And without me doing another thing to those bottles, the grr bottle completely restored itself just
really?
By having the consciousness of that ooh sound on it. And so now, if you could see them now, they look exactly the same.
Wow.
And not so long ago, about 2 weeks ago, in fact, I opened them up and pH tested them. They had exactly the same pH, but the interesting thing that I never expected to find was that when I opened the lid the initial Guru bottle was so corroded that 2 weeks later now I can see tiny pinpricks where the light is now just starting to come through.
Where the what starting to come through?
And yet the other lid was not corroded.
Oh, really? Wow, that's amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing. You know what Dr. Emoto, Masaru Emoto did in 1999 or, or the early 90s? He took a bottle of radioactive water from a nuclear reactor in Japan, and he wrote the words love and gratitude on the bottle and then put a sticker from a crystal sticker from love and gratitude. He'd taken a photograph in his laboratory, and within 48 hours, the radiation was completely gone. Completely gone.
That does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, yeah. And I've as I've said many times on my program, I don't know why they don't do the same thing at Fukushima in Japan. I mean, it would cost nothing, almost nothing, to write the words love and gratitude on the reactors there. And in theory, most of that radiation should be gone within 48 hours. There's no reason why it wouldn't work.
You know, I think that we underestimate the power of water.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ted, think about it this way. For many years, scientists actually never studied our watery cytoplasm.
Mm-hmm.
All they studied was DNA because they believed that DNA, you know, was the holder of all of our genetic material, and that was what determined our health. It would just unfold. And what scientists are now discovering as they're starting to study our watery cytoplasm, I mean, 99% of our atoms, as Dr. Pollack says, are made up of water. You know, that's a lot of water compared to how much DNA we have. And whatever signals are coming into our cells actually have to transverse our watery cytoplasm in order to get to our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And so the signals that are coming into our cells I think are determined a lot by our consciousness, and that's what's actually determining how our genes are upregulated or downregulated, and what happens to our health.
That's very profound, and I think extremely accurate as well. We are powerful spiritual beings, Kari. I've always thought that, and we can help create the kind of reality and the kind of health we want too. So, if we
absolutely can,
absolutely.
And you know, here's the thing, Ted. I think that, unfortunately, we have fallen prey to this medical model that tells us we need pills, doctors, and hospitals.
Right.
But, you know, if you Google on YouTube, Greg Braden's got a lovely bit of work where he went to a medicineless hospital in China.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually see real time as they dissolve a tumor inside a woman's body. You can see it on the scan disappearing before your eyes, just by changing their consciousness around her.
Wow.
So it's not just, you know, our consciousness also doesn't stay in our skin.
Right.
And this is one of my biggest points, is that, you know, our consciousness goes out into the world and creates this world. It's like a soup of creation. And I think we have to ask ourselves, you know, what consciousness am I creating to this world? And if we think that the world is, you know, one big mess, maybe we have to start by looking at ourselves and saying, you know, what am I putting into the soup that's contributing to the mess?
Right, right. Well, you know, that's, and the follow-up too, what kind of world is the U.S. mass media creating in this country and the world as well? If they
And what level of consciousness are they creating?
Sure, right, right.
You know, what's that doing to our health? And, as you said, you know, how's that going out and creating more and more of this chaos that, you know, we think we want to avoid.
Right, right, exactly. That's why I always try to keep my program positive. And when I discuss negative things, I always try to look at things in a positive way, if possible, to try to make lemonade out of lemons. Because it doesn't do any good to discuss negative things and then give only negative solutions. Everything that happens to people here and countries and everybody here on the planet are all life lessons. That's how I look at it. And there's always...
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's always something you can learn, even though it may be not much pleasant at the time. There's always something you can learn from it. So,
But, you know, Ted, it's so interesting. I mean, if we look back on some of our toughest times, because everybody has life challenges.
True.
Including centenarians. You know, if you think that centenarians are living these lives of rainbows and... No, they have the same challenges as we do. But, you know, there's something so valuable in challenge. We forget that as human beings, we actually need struggle. I know we don't think we do, but we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Kari. I was going to ask you, how did you ever get into this particular field?
Well, you mean studying centenarians and
yes.
consciousness?
Mm-hmm. And longevity and these issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was really fortunate to have a centenarian who I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather, my paternal grandfather, mm-hmm. fought in both world wars, lived through the Great Depression, and he lived with us from the age of 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always had an interest in, you know, why did he live so long? And I actually asked him, in fact, he wrote a list for me when he was in his 90s. I said to him, you know, Grandpa, why do you think you've lived so long? Because you've also got to remember, he was born in 1998, and if he'd lived two more years, he would have lived in all three centuries.
Oh, my goodness.
It was even more rare in those days than it is now to have centenarians.
Right.
And he gave me this very nice little list, and I looked at it, and I said, Grandpa, that's a very nice list, but there's nothing special on this list. And he got this little twinkle in his eyes, and I'll never forget it. And he said, there is something special, but I can't write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, well, what is it? You know, what is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, I never go to hospitals or doctors.
Oh.
And that was true, you know. The only time that he had ever gone to doctors was when he got shot in the Second World War. Sorry, not when he was shot, but when he was wounded in the Second World War. And 3 years before he died, he contracted an infection.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only two times that he actually went to hospital or
sure.
to see doctors.
Sure.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with going to doctors, and I'm not telling people not to go to doctors.
Right.
But I am saying that we have become way too reliant. We give away our power.
That's right.
To heal ourselves. Because, you know, my grandfather's take on life was, you know, I've got a cold, no problem. It's going to be gone in a few days.
Right.
And now we know all about the placebo effect. And, you know, what
right.
you believe powerfully influences your health and your longevity and just how you live life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more, Kari. That's such a beautiful, wonderful words of wisdom you're giving. Well, your grandfather, so he was born in the 19th century, lived through the 20th,
mm-hmm.
almost made it to this century.
Correct.
And my goodness, what a perspective he had.
Yeah, and you know, watching him and having now interviewed, you know, centenarians and looked at lots of interviews of them and studied the studies about them, I just see that they have a way of being in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that that makes a difference, because I think that their way of being and their belief system vibrate through their watery cytoplasm and then upregulates different genes, because we now know that, you know, genes aren't the static things.
Mm-hmm.
Genes are changed. I mean, in 1 hour, I was reading a research article the other day. In 1 hour, 72 genes are upregulated or downregulated. And I think we forget that, you know, our cells are eavesdropping on every single thought intention that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when we're being honorable, for example, you would never think that being honorable is a health measure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about the level of consciousness that comes with being an honorable person,
mm-hmm.
and you think about how that plays through your cells over and over, over decades, it makes an enormous difference to everything from your immune system to which genes are upregulated or downregulated.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow, that's amazing. One of the things I think that medical doctors here in the United States make as a mistake is that I think it's maybe well-meaning, I'm not sure, but even if a person, for example, like has cancer, and a doctor
mm-hmm.
may thoughtlessly say, well, you've got 6 months to live, and there's
yep.
no hope for you. The problem
mm-hmm.
with that kind of diagnostic, even if it's even partially true, is that that person often will die within 6 months, no matter what's done. And people give away their power to the medical profession so that they don't feel like there's any hope. Because I've
yeah.
seen different alternative therapies do work for people and beat cancer. And as Egyptian doctors said in Egypt 5,000 years ago, behind every disease, there's a dis-ease. In other words, there's a spiritual cause
mm-hmm.
for every physical condition that you have. And once you realize
Absolutely.
That, if you can work on your spiritual side, you can help correct that.
And you see, Ted, you've just said exactly what I'm trying to say, and that, mm-hmm. that it's your consciousness, because mm-hmm. consciousness that is low consciousness causes dis-ease, and mm-hmm. dis-ease mm-hmm. vibrates through ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you were saying just now that doctors unwittingly may say something like, oh, you've got 6 months to live, I think that, you know, it's hard for us to know at what point does that doctor's word actually cause exactly what they say it's going to, because our right. belief system, it's very hard to know once someone said that and once they believe that,
right.
it's hard to know how long they really would have lived because that's what they believe.
Right.
And our belief is all important. I mean, I used to live in California in Napa,
mm-hmm.
and I had a neighbor who I went back to go and see recently, mm-hmm. and she had been diagnosed with cancer, but she said to me, you know, Carrie, that's not what's going to kill me. I've got a small growth in my throat, and it's going to block my air channel. And she said, that's what's going to kill me. And I said, oh, how do you know that? She said, well, that's what the doctor told me.
Oh, okay.
And mm-hmm. and I said, well, you know, what do you mean it's going to kill you? Because she was hale and hearty. Honestly, I mean, if she hadn't told me there was something wrong with her, I would not know.
Sure.
And to my absolute horror, a week later she died, and I know she died because not because of the air blockage, because it hadn't grown that much,
mm-hmm.
but because her belief was that she was going to die.
Sure. Wow. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Of course, I think in medical schools here in the United States, they don't teach doctors the psychological impact and the mm-hmm. medical impacts of their words. In Japan, they have a religion called Shintoism, and the Shintoism mm-hmm. teaches people that words have spirits in them, so that if you say a word to somebody, it can affect them in a physical way in this third dimension. And
But of course it does. Look at Dr. Emoto's experiment.
Oh, absolutely.
Look at my little rat experiment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, using Dr. Emoto's ideas and his successful experiments, here in the United States, we could clean up Hanford within 48 hours by writing Love mm-hmm. and Gratitude on the reactors at Hanford, which has been sitting there since mm-hmm. World War II. Or they could even clean up the radiation at Fukushima or the radiation mm-hmm. at Chernobyl in the Ukraine that's probably still there after all these years. So,
Let me tell you a fascinating... Sorry, Ted, finish your thought, and then let me tell you a fascinating story about Chernobyl that you'll really be interested in. But finish your thought first.
No, go ahead.
Well, have you ever heard of a movie called The Babushkas of Chernobyl?
No, I haven't. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
I would highly recommend you watch it, and your listeners do too. Mm-hmm. So the story goes like this. 25 years after Chernobyl, there was a reporter who was sent there, Holly Evans, to go and do a report and a follow-up on Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
And as they got closer, they were all wearing Geiger counters, and of course their Geiger counters went off, and you know they were all wanting to get out of there as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But as she was filming, in the background, she saw a little plume of smoke. And she said to the guards, what is that plume of smoke coming from inside, you know, the evacuated area?
Right.
And the guard said, oh, no, that's the babushkas. And she said, the babushkas? What do you mean? And the story unfolds that when Chernobyl exploded, what they did was they evacuated everybody within a 30-kilometer radius, and they sent them to the outskirts of Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this group of mainly women, about 200 of them, that walked 70 miles back to Chernobyl and dug their way underneath the fence to return to what they call the motherland.
Mm-hmm.
And the guards would throw them out, and they would come back again. And eventually they said to the guards, look, we don't believe radiation can harm us. You're going to have to shoot us if you want us to leave.
They
and
told
so
them
they
that?
Left them there.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Wow.
So they were absolutely convinced, these babushkas, that radiation could not harm us. And in the movie, the one babushka says, as long as you're living in the motherland, you can't get sick. And their belief was so strong that for 25 years, they have been eating fish caught in toxic waters. They have been eating vegetables grown in toxic soil, animals raised on toxic soil, you know, in that area, breathing toxic air, drinking toxic water, and yet they seem immune to radiation. Now, think about how powerful your belief has to be when you believe so strongly that radiation can't harm you that it doesn't.
Oh, my goodness. You've just, that's amazing. I learned, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I learned something really very profound today. Thank you for sharing that. I had no idea.
You see, Ted, I think what happens is that our belief obviously affects our consciousness.
Right.
And if you look at somebody's energy fields through, let's say, using Kirlian photography, if your belief system is radiation can't harm me, it's almost like your energy field is complete and whole and very vibrant around you and actually doesn't allow the outside forces in.
Right.
But when you're in that same environment and thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm terrified, radiation's going to harm me,
right,
your energy field is small and it has holes in it, and sure enough, then the environment can reach you.
I agree with you totally. There was a book written some years ago now, about 15, 20 years ago, and it's called Creative Visualization. And if you wanted to...
Say that again, Ted. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it's called Creative Visualization. Let me see if I can look up the...
Oh, yeah, Shakti Gwain.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. And one of the ways that if you want to create a beautiful, positive future for yourself is that you would visualize that happening in the future, and then you'd meditate, mm-hmm, Kari, and then you would basically go into the future from this, like, let's say, for example, if you wanted a new home or you wanted a family or a new job, mm-hmm, or whatever you wanted, you'd go into the future, visualize that happening, and then bring that energy back to the present and believe that it's going to happen, and then you would take the steps starting today, now, and mm-hmm, go into the future, and that'll happen. It's very effective. It's a very effective technique.
Let me tell you, I actually followed Shakti Gwain's work and did something that was so powerful that it rocked my world.
Mm-hmm.
So let me share it with you. Do we have time to share it?
Of course. We've got about 29 minutes, so no worries.
Okay, good. Now I won't need 29 minutes.
Okay, all right,
so
28 minutes.
I was in my 30s, and for some or other reason, I had decided that I wanted twins. I have no idea why I wanted twins, but for some reason, that appealed to me.
Okay.
So I made a creative visualization. I had a picture of myself holding two different awards, and I cut the awards up, and I put twin babies in each hand.
Mm-hmm.
I had those pictures stuck up on my cupboard, on my computer, and my car dashboard. I had this little visualization I did twice a day. That was 10 minutes where I saw the sperm meeting the ovum and splitting it into two, and the babies growing.
Mm-hmm.
And not once, but twice, I conceived twins, and we have no twins anywhere on either side of our family.
Oh, how beautiful. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I know that, you know, and that's the other important reason why my program is I try to always be positive, because if you think positive thoughts and think that good things will happen in the future, guess what? You'll create that reality. And
mm-hmm,
on the other hand, if you're part of the U.S. media that's very negative and you want to dwell on negative things, you'll help create that as well. But I think most people are sick and tired of fighting, and they want a better world, a happier world,
mm-hmm,
where people live longer and are healthier and happier. And that's the kind of world that people want, personally. I think that's what they resonate with.
You know, Ted, there's so much research that backs up what you're saying as well. I mean, mm-hmm, in 1975, there was a psychologist called Becca Levy, and her and her team, mm-hmm, went and they interviewed about 650 people in Oxford, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they asked them questions that they could either agree with or disagree with. Things like, you know, things keep getting worse as I get older, or as you get older, you get less useful, or, you know, I'm happier now than I was when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they looked at those responses, and they put these people then, dependent on their answers, into a group of either, you know, they embraced aging and they were positive about life, or they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back 20 years later, and the people that were positive lived on average 7.5 years longer than those that were negative. Now, you know, we worry about our diet, and we worry about reducing cholesterol, and we worry about our blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is that just having a positive disposition made, mm-hmm, more difference than if you lowered your blood pressure or reduced your cholesterol, which typically improved lifespan by about 4 years,
mm-hmm,
And it also beats the benefits of exercise, maintaining what they think of as a proper weight, not smoking, which add about 1 to 3 years to your life. So just by being positive. And again, you know, when we're positive, what we're doing is we're changing our level of consciousness. And when we change our consciousness, that's what's playing through ourselves.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That was Becky
You're
Levy.
Welcome.
Is that L-E-V-Y? Yes. Is that right?
L-E-V-Y.
Okay. Wonderful.
And it's actually
look
Becca.
Okay. I'll look it up. That sounds great.
Yeah, do that.
Well, I think the planet itself is shifting rapidly into the higher dimensions. I've mentioned this before in my radio show, but for tens of thousands of years, the frequency of this planet, planet Earth, was at 7.8 hertz. That changed, however, in September of 2016, and it doubled to 13.8 during that month in September 2016. And since that time now, I think it's up close to 190. They actually had the scientist here on the Earth had to create a new scale for it because it had risen so much. And the information I get from my spirit friends on the other side is that within about 2.5 years, it's going to go to 800 hertz. And this is all part of the process. The planet itself is moving into a part of our universe, which is much higher vibration. It's not only affecting planet Earth, but it's also affecting Mars and Pluto and Saturn, our sun, and all the other planets in this solar system. And so it's changing. Things are going to be changing for us. Nostradamus has told me that things which are things like telepathy and the ability to read others' minds and do what psychics do now, what I do now, will become far more commonplace within the next 5 to 7 years. More and more people will start doing it. And so, and I know that I come from a psychic family, and many years ago, I couldn't tell people that I had this ability because I was afraid of getting ridiculed. People would make fun of me, and so I just learned just to be quiet about it. But now it's easier for me to be more open about it. Sometimes people don't accept what I do, which is okay. I respect other people's belief systems. I know I don't have all the answers. But things are changing now, and I think that things will be far better for ourselves and our children and our children's children for the future. We're entering a new golden age, and you're helping people with that, Carrie, by focusing in on your longevity studies. I noticed that you're having an event out in Vancouver, Washington, here in the next couple of weeks. Could you tell my listeners about that for those of you, those of people in your area?
Well, you know what I'd actually like to tell you about, Ted, is that next Tuesday, the 1st of May, I'm actually going to be doing a free webinar at 3:30, and it's titled How to Create a Magical Vision of Yourself.
Oh, nice.
And
okay.
It's really about how to move into self-love. And if anyone would like to do that, if they click, if they go to, and I'm going to give you the easy way to remember my website, just secrets2100, the numeral 100. If you go to that URL and you click on your link, the little banner saying that I'm speaking here today, then you can, I've actually done it so that any of your listeners can attend it for free.
Oh, isn't that kind of you? Thank you so much.
They just have to register. So as long as they click on your banner, it's the only way they can do it free.
Well, I have to ask you, too, 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday on May 1st, is that 3:30 p.m. Pacific time? Because there's lots of time zones.
It is Pacific.
Okay,
it is
Pacific
time.
That's
but
Seattle time.
But if they register, I will also send them, I'll be happy to send them a link if they aren't able to attend live.
Oh, nice. That's wonderful. What a nice gift you've given everyone.
You know, I always think that if we've got something that we can share with people, it's always good to share.
Wonderful. Now, tell me about your books, too. I know that your one book that you're working on is called Unleash Your Secret Powers to Live Longer, Better, Lessons from Those Who Lived to Over 100 Years. Could you tell us a little bit about that, if you like, or one of your other books?
Well, that particular book, which is actually at the publisher right now, is all about what I've learned from studying centenarians. And a lot of the studies that I've spoken about today are actually in this book. And it's not just taking their stories, but it's also explaining why I believe that consciousness is more important than how much you run, what you eat, et cetera, et cetera. And giving you all the research. There are hundreds of research articles that inform this, so it's not just something that I've sucked out of my thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So people can actually go and look at the research themselves and see whether this makes sense to them. And I talk about people as having a body song.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what is your body song? And your body song is determined by your level of consciousness.
Interesting. I'll have to introduce you to my friends, Josh and Adam Bigelson. I call them the Blood Brothers because they do work like Dr. Emoto did when he was alive, but with blood. And they look at blood on the electron microscope level, and they'll see images. For example, if somebody has a childhood trauma, it'll come up in their blood on the electron microscope. They'll see an image, or for example, if somebody maybe had a broken leg when they were much younger, you'll see a picture of a leg broken in their blood.
Wow.
And one of the funny stories they told me about, they were at my last Galactic Wisdom Conference in March here a couple months ago in Olympia, Washington. They said that they went on vacation. When they first came up to the Seattle area, they went on vacation, and one of the brothers was very concerned about his health, and he wouldn't eat ice cream, and he stayed away from all these fattening foods. The second brother, I can't remember which one it was, but the second brother said, I'm going to eat all the junk food I like, ice cream and you name it, all the bad stuff that I normally don't eat, and I'm not going to gain any weight. I'm not going to suffer any bad effects from it. And the funny thing is, the second brother who said that and ate all this junk food didn't gain any weight, nothing. But the first brother, who was very concerned about gaining weight from eating junk food or whatever, actually gained some weight on the trip from his eating habits. So consciousness does affect you completely. And so it's always...
Well, not only does it affect us in that way, but you know, there's some fascinating research about how just enjoying your food actually changes the how much iron, for example, you absorb from the same food. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're always worried about what we eat.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't worry about is the way we eat it, the consciousness with which we eat it. And that changes everything because it changes our gut biome.
Right.
And when our gut biome changes, it changes digestion, it changes assimilation and absorption.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we're at a new frontier where we're starting to say, you know, it's not so much about what we eat. And I'm not saying that, you know, that it doesn't matter at all. But if those babushkas can eat toxic food for 25 years, what is it about their consciousness that means that they are hale and hearty? And by the way, they've outlived their relatives who were moved to the Ukraine by up to 10 years. And the life expectancy in Ukraine was something like 71. And these were babushkas in their late 70s and early 80s. So, you know, I think there's so much about enjoying food. And by the way, the other thing is if people go to my website, they can sign up to get my free ebook. And that's the stories about my grandfather.
Mm.
And his way of eating was absolutely fascinating.
Hmm. What did he eat? I mean, was he health conscious? Did he eat lots of junk food? And he'd say, like the babushkas, this is not going to affect me and I'm still going to be healthy even though I'm eating all this junk food? And
you know, it wasn't so much that, Ted, because I think that, you know, we've always had this idea that food is medicine. It's much worse now or much bigger now than what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he enjoyed every morsel.
Mm.
And, I mean, you know, he was like a frustrated chemist in a way. So every morning he would have porridge for breakfast, but he would grate cheese on it. He would put honey on it. He would put big dollops of cream on it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes homemade cheese, you know, like the ricotta, in addition to the grated cheese, he'd put nuts on it. You know, so he was a very, he ate for enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
And he had lots of rituals around how he ate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we've lost some of those rituals. What we tend to do is grab and go and eat in our cars, eat in front of TV.
Right.
We don't even taste our food.
Right. That's true. We're all, for many people, especially here in the West, we're always in a hurry, especially here in the United States.
Always in a hurry. Yeah. And by the way, my Mind Over Fatter program, which was the first book that I wrote, that program helps people to restore their love of eating and eating without guilt.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Wow. Wonderful. Well, I know that in Italy, they take, what, 2 or 3 hours to have a lunch?
Look at, you know, if you look at the blue zones, places like Icaria in Greece and Sardinia. You know, they have these extended kind of lunches with a siesta. And,
right.
and it's a lot about, you know, not only what am I eating and how much am I enjoying it, but who am I eating it with?
Right.
You know, very often we're stuck in our little cubicle gulping down food, whereas food, when it's eaten in the company of others, has something so magical about it.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kari. I couldn't agree with you more.
It tastes better as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, I have a conference every year called the Galactic Wisdom Conference. My next one will be in April 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. And I'd love to have you come next year if you'd like and give a presentation.
I would love to do that.
Okay, I'll get you in.
That would be fabulous.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. And you're not too far away from me either. You're in Vancouver,
no?
Washington? Oh.
I'm just down the drag from you.
About an hour and 20 minutes on I-5.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's great. Well, you mentioned Dr. Candace Pert, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Dr. Joe Dispenza, who's actually from the Olympia Yelm area, believe it or not.
That's right.
Dr. Ellen Langer, Dr. David Hawkins, and as well as Dr. Montigny, Dr. Emoto, Jerry Pollack. They're all saying the same thing, aren't they? I mean, consciousness does affect reality.
Well, you know, I think that if you take what they're saying and you kind of overlap it, that's what makes me believe that, you know, Candace Pert did that fantastic work on, you know, the receptors on our cells and how over time, you know, our bodies are infinitely wise. If we're only giving them molecules of guilt, you know, then the receptors on our cells go, okay, well, I only need the receptors to receive guilt molecules. I don't need ones for joy anymore because they never come along. So they produce more guilt receptors. And if that, you know, receptors work like a little lock and key. And once that's opened and it gets that signal into your watery cytoplasm, that's what's then accessing your DNA. And so, you know, like Dr. Joe Dispenza says, we literally become addicted to the biochemistry of our emotions in that way, because our body keeps manufacturing and saying, hey, I need more of those guilt molecules. Send me more guilt molecules. So,
wow.
And that's why we often create the same dramas over and over.
So some people feed off the dramas because they crave it, or is it something that's the only thing they know about?
Well, I think it's a combination of both because, you know, what makes us create dramas, and very often what makes us create dramas is that, you know, we have thoughts and beliefs that are stored from childhood. And, you know, we don't even know what those thoughts and judgments are, but everything that we do in life, we are constantly judging, is it safe for me, is it good for me, is it bad for me, is it what for me?
Sure, sure.
And we are creating the biochemistry that goes with that.
Right.
For example, if you're always thinking I'm less than and I'm not worthy than, you know, that's the biochemistry that you've been taught to produce as a child, and you will continue to do that until you learn how to stop being addicted to those molecules of emotion.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, I'm looking forward to the next 5 to 7 years. At one point, Nostradamus said that we would finish shifting into the fifth dimension and have a totally new planet, a very peaceful and loving planet without the war and conflict that we sometimes have here now, by 2038. Then a few years ago, he said that we had progressed so fast that so many of us were making the good choices for ourselves and our future, that had shifted now by 10 years to 2028. A couple of months ago, in my conversations with him, Nostradamus has said that's now shifted to 2025. And this is 2018, so we're looking at, 7 years off? That's not very far. That is not very far.
But you see, Ted, if you think about it, it makes sense in so many ways, because you know, if you look at the work of Dr. David Hawkins, who wrote Power versus Force and created the map of human consciousness, basically what he's saying is, you know, it's a logarithmic scale. And so if you're vibrating at the consciousness of love, you are vibrating at such a high level compared to someone, let's say, who's vibrating at a very low level of shame.
Right.
And it only takes one person vibrating at a high level of love to change multiple people that are vibrating at a much lower consciousness level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to tell you something. I witnessed this firsthand happening in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was brought up in South Africa, in apartheid South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
And when Nelson Mandela was in jail and we heard that he was going to be released, I can tell you that fear in the white community was palpable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody was convinced we were all going to be murdered in our beds, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we were vibrating at a very low level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But 4 years later, those same white people lined up for hours in the hot sun and voted for Nelson Mandela. And
wow.
How did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
It happened because he was vibrating at such a high level of peace that it miraculously changed all of us, literally.
Wow.
I mean, we adored him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we moved from fear to love for this man purely because the energy that he was putting out into the world changed the energy that we were putting out into the world.
Wow.
And if you look at the work of Dr. John Hagelin,
mm-hmm.
The radiance effect, you're now seeing that there's a lot of research proving exactly this, that it takes a very small number of people vibrating at a high level of consciousness to change a large number of people.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. I think that the tipping point has been reached. I think it started with the vibrations rising in September of 2016, and I think that tipping point is now we are past the point of no return,
mm-hmm.
and we are well on our way to creating a much better and much, much happier planet than any time in the past 50, 60,000 years. I really do. This is a big deal. And there's the negative.
But, you know, Ted, we also have to remember that we will never have total peace, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because we need struggle. You know, there's something created energetically when we have yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are way out of whack at the moment with, you know, the energetic input, but it's shifting in the right way. But we will always need yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how much, you know, it's completely out of balance at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But I look at it getting back to balance. And I think that especially with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, even he's realizing, and I think the leaders in North Korea are realizing that we're all one. And if we blow up the entire planet with a bunch of nuclear bombs, that serves no purpose. It's a dead-end street. Why would anybody in their right mind do anything like that? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any
sense.
And
you see, Ted, I think that our responsibility
Mm-hmm.
You know, our responsibility is not to buy into the fear that it's going to happen. Because
mm-hmm.
if we all buy into the fear that it's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
then we will create it. Not Kim Jong-un.
Right.
We will create it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas when we're all peaceful and calm and saying, you know, he's seeing that we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to create.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Well, it sounds like we've got a lot we agree on.
yeah. Well, this goes back to your psychologist, Becca Levy, L-E-V-Y, and she found that people's mindsets contribute more to their health than physiological factors. And that would be really good for the medical community here in the United States and Canada and other Western countries to tell their elderly patients that, instead of just plying them with pills and endless new drugs, that doesn't really help anything except make drug companies richer.
And they are rich enough.
They're rich enough, absolutely. Absolutely.
And let's not even get onto the subject of side effects.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, for those of you who are listening outside of the United States, here in the U.S., we often have a lot of drug company commercials. And they'll show these people, you know, like going through a forest or swimming or, you know, going around a meadow or some sort of park. And you get mesmerized watching this commercial maybe for a minute. And then in the background, you always have this announcer and they're saying stuff like, well, this drug may kill you. It may cause you to go blind. It may permanently disable you. And so,
yeah, but while they're doing this, you see, you hear the happy music and people happy, sort of, you know, singing and dancing.
Right. So if people do suffer negative effects from these medications, if they try to sue the drug company will say, "Well, we told people, you know, they always have the all this stuff, horrible things happening to you if you take this drug." But it's an interesting psychological technique. I always laugh when I see the drug commercials because if you listen to what they're saying, it's awful what some of these drugs do to people. Here's an example. GMO foods here in the United States, GMO corn, that's the main contributor to what's called Crohn's disease or shredded bowel syndrome. And it's been well known, and there's actually drugs put out by Big Pharma for that now. But if the simple thing is, if you simply stop eating GMO, especially GMO corn and GMO soy products, your symptoms usually just clear up completely. And you don't need drugs. You don't need drugs to fix something that's been caused by nutrition. It's an interesting world we live in, isn't it? Really interesting.
It is. You know, it's a pity that we're so into the quick fix. Mm-hmm. I actually had a client that I was working with, a coaching client, and she was going to a doctor. She was having some motor tremor disease issues, and they were going to do all these psychological and neurological tests on her. And I said to her, "I've got a little meditation that I've created called Your Healing Body, mm-hmm. and I'm going to send it to you.
Oh, thank you.
And I want you to do this. I'll send it to you afterwards. But I asked her if she would do this twice a day, just for a week. And you know that her motor tremors went away completely. Mm-hmm. And she was absolutely amazed. And I said to her, you know, what you've got to remember is that when you're doing this little meditation, you're changing your brain waves, you're changing your heartbeat, you're changing everything in your body. It's as if you're turning on a pharmacy. You know, you've already got an internal pharmacy, but you're just fine-tuning it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing. Could you play it? We've got about 2 minutes. We're kind of running out of time here. But I want to thank you, Carrie, so much for coming on today. And in the last couple of minutes we've got left, I wanted to tell you that so you could wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Well, thank you. And I also wanted to, I'm excited to be on TV with you on the 2nd of May. That's the same day that I'm doing my webinar.
Wonderful.
But, I'm looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Can't wait to have you on. We'll be doing a pre-record for those interested, and you can just look up Out of This World on YouTube, and it'll be there. It depends on production schedule in the next week or two, but I'll let everybody know when it's there. We have, I think, close to 55 or 60 episodes now on my television part of the show. I think we're entering a time, Carrie, where people will be not only be healthier, but they're living far, far longer. One of the messages that I've gotten from my Galactic Alliance friends is that on typical human planets beyond this Earth, people live typically on average about 1,000 years. Some live up to 25,000 mm-hmm. years, to the point where they can choose mm-hmm. to exit their bodies if they want. And like if you're from the Pleiades, for example, which is a fifth and sixth dimensional civilization, there's no disease. People remember everything when they're born, and that as you spirit, they tell me, my Pleiadian friends tell me, and the Galactics tell me, as you spiritually advance, you will live longer, much longer, and look younger too. A 300-year-old Pleiadian person, for example, will look about 30 years in Earth years. And so we're headed that way. I know of very spiritual people in their mid to late 60s who look mm-hmm. maybe in their 30s, seriously.
Right.
Because they're very spiritually advanced, and they basically have stopped the aging process.
Yeah. You know, Ted, when we're chatting on May 2nd for TV, mm-hmm. Remind me to tell you about some of the fascinating work done by Ellen Langer and how she helped people reverse their biological markers of aging, including how old they looked. Really fascinating.
Oh, how interesting. Well, we've got about 30 seconds left, and I want to thank you so much for coming on today, Kari. And send me the link to Ellen Langer. That would be, I would really enjoy seeing that.
Okay. And would you like me to send you the link? Well, mind you, it's just on my homepage, the link to that
sure.
webinar that people can
sure.
sign up for.
Please do. Please send me the link and then I'll post it.
I will do that.
1 week from today, we'll be having Simon Parks on, along with another wonderful psychic coming to us from Australia and Bali. But anyway, Kari, thank you so much for coming on today, and I hope everyone listening today has a really happy and wonderful weekend. Thanks, everyone, so much for supporting Out of This World Radio. Bye-bye.